boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Patrick Danner, and we are starting another Soundtrack, the radio show about, obviously, soundtracks in the movies, in series, in whatever you want, in audiovisual in general. And this is a radio show that is broadcasted by Uninter Radio. And I want to invite you all to listen to me. And even though you might not speak fluent English, that's not a problem. Please listen to good music. Enjoy your time here. Get one word or another. It doesn't matter. So don't take it too seriously. And we'll have a great time. That's what I want and that's what I expect. Just by the way, you can listen to us at uninter.com/radio web, and that's it. The show goes on every Thursday and Friday, and you can also check us on our podcast. So if you don't get it live, you can download or listen to it whenever you want, because it will be available via our podcast as well. Today I'm going to talk about a movie that I have just watched. In fact, I watched it yesterday. We are recording the show, so it's not actually yesterday when you're listening to it. But I got mesmerized. I was appalled and bedazzled at the same time. It was just a punch on my stomach in a good way, as if that can be something. It was gloomy and sad and violent and angry. And it makes you think. That's a good thing, because it's not a movie that you forget a couple of hours after watching it. And I'm going to talk about the Joker, or better. They dropped the D, so it's now Joker, and that's it. So Joker, as if you don't know, maybe. Joker is a 2019 American psychological thriller film directed by Todd Phillips. We're going to talk a little bit more about the director afterwards. Who co-wrote the screenplay with Scott Silver? The film, based on DC Comics characters, star Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker.
Soundtrack.
So you're back after my favorite spot from the show, Darth Vader's, and now we're back. So we're talking about The Joker, the movie, released in 2019. We had lots of versions on silver screen showing this villain twisted, because he's absolutely crazy. He has a reason, but the reason for him to become a villain goes beyond just because he's evil. One thing that I liked about the movie is that the Joker portrayed in this movie specifically, he has multi-purposes or multi-reasons that makes him not a bi-dimensional character. He's multi-dimensional character, and that brings depth to the character, and I just loved it about it. It's not an easy movie, I must say, but I recommend everybody to watch it, because it's just cinema magic. It's just film magic happening before your eyes. I mean, there is no way I'm saying it's perfect, because it isn't. I'll talk more about other critics I've read trashing and saying good things about the movie, maybe at the same time, maybe separately. But I'll give you a glimpse about the story, telling you the synopsis or a summary. By now, there are no spoilers, so do not worry. I will warn you when spoilers come, okay? So the story is about a forever alone in a crowd, failed comedian Arthur Fleck, who seeks connection as he walks the streets of Gotham City. Arthur wears two masks, the one he paints for his day job as a clown, and the disguise he projects in a futile attempt to feel like he is part of the world around him. Isolated, bullied, and disregarded by society, Flex begins a slow descent into madness as he transforms into the criminal mastermind known as the Joker. And of course, we are going to focus a little bit more on the soundtrack, but there is no way I cannot speak about the movie itself, about its story, the acting, the photography director. The direction is something out of this world. And in these matters, I liked it, everything. I liked the soundtrack itself, or the editing is marvelous, the pace, the speed of editing. I just thought it was spot on. And about the soundtrack of the movie, according to the Polygon.com, and I quote, "The dissonance of Joker's comic book movie soundtrack never falls in step with Phoenix's performance. The groaning strings of the score seems consistently out of step with Arthur's frenetic energy, echoing the pop song surface level used by going for a serious sound rather than working in a tandem with what's happening on screen." And I close quotes. The thing is, I do not agree with that critic. I do not agree with that opinion. I think that even though the movie is set in the 80s, some of the songs of some of the most iconic songs on the movie are from the 60s. And I do not think that is a problem. I think it fits perfectly, even though most of people, even I thought a little bit about it. It might sound a little cliche to put songs like Sending the Clowns in a movie, or even Put It on a Happy Face. But as cliche as it might be, I think it fits. I think it's a little dissonant, yes, but still, I think it gives mood to the movie, and it doesn't have to keep the pace with Joaquin Phoenix acting. He's heretic and he's full of energy, and that's okay. But I think I like the other point, the other, you know, the other mood that it has with music, even though it's not exactly matching what you watch. But I think that it's a plus. That's a gain. That is a good thing. We're going to listen now to a song called Put on a Happy Face. This version is sung by Tony Bennett. It was written in 1960. As I said before, so these most iconic songs were written and recorded back in the 60s. It's one of those songs that has a perfect ease. It seems to sing itself, although, obviously, a guy who knows what he's doing with it helps. But everyone from Blossom Dairy to the Supremes has sung it. And why wouldn't they? It's a hard song to say no to. So we're going to listen now to Put on a Happy Face with Tony Bennett from 1962.
Hi! Gray skies are gonna clear up. Put on a happy face. Brush off the clouds and cheer up. Put on a happy face. Take off the gloomy mask of tragedy. It's not your style. You'll look so good that you'll be glad you decided to smile. Pick out a pleasant outlook. Stick out that noble chin. Wipe off that full of doubt look. Slap on a happy grin. And spread sunshine all over the place. And put on a happy face. Gray skies are gonna clear up. Put on a happy face. Brush off the clouds and cheer up. Put on a happy face. And if you're feeling cross and bakerish, don't sit and whine. Think of banana splits and licorice, and you'll feel fine. I knew a girl so gloomy, she'd never laugh or sing. She wouldn't listen to me, now she's a mean old thing. So spread sunshine all over the place and put on a happy, happy face. Put on a happy, happy, happy face. Oh, come on, Bubby, smile, it's your birthday.
So you're back. I want to say something to make it clear. I think it was a little bit confusing before because I said put on a happy face. It's from the 1960s, exactly from 1960, but it was written in 1960, but Tony Bennett recorded it in 1962. I can remember the first time I listened to the song. I'm a great fan of these standards. But I think that Put On a Happy Face, I've listened to the first time in a movie, and I can't recall the movie, but I can recall there was an annoying singer kid who was trying to show up every time, and he was singing with on the top of his lungs, Put On a Happy Face, and that just stuck with me. Just a brief commentary about where I got the reference from. So, if you haven't watched the movie and if you don't want to listen to any spoilers, if you don't want to know about any spoilers, please stop listening now because spoilers are about to come. They are not major spoilers. They are smaller spoilers maybe, but there we go. Yes, I'm going to talk about the movie, a little bit of my own impressions about it. Because if you watched it, I like that they linger, they let some informations hanging that are not absolutely clear to the audience, and I think that's excellent. On the other hand, I think that some points that they over-explained the movie, it's not as good as if they had those sequences or those scenes and explained, or at least not as explicit to craving for detailed information about what happened, just like when they show the neighbors disappearing on the hospital sofa and so forth. You know, I think that scene, that sequence was absolutely unnecessary because you don't have to explain everything, you know, and in those terms. I think that it was quite clear that it was a figment of his imagination, you know. But on the other hand, I keep questioning myself, was Joker's mother really crazy? Because that was not clear to me. Because yes, it might be that Thomas Wayne bought everyone's silence and sent Penny Flack to a mental institution just in order to silence her. And that was not clear. And I think that's a good point. That maybe even be a good hook for a Joker 2, a Joker sequence. What brings me to another question, that if he's really Batman's brother, then I wouldn't be pleased with that plot, with that sequence, because I think that is an easy answer, an easy way to put it, because I was imagining just from the beginning that, oh my God, he's Batman's brother, that would be it. And that was so out there, so, you know, obvious to me, then I think that it would be something to ruin the story. And moreover, that's not real Joker's story and Batman's story. That would bring a whole new arc to this story, to the movie, turning Joker as Batman's brother, you know, Bruce Wayne's brother. And that would, I think, in my opinion, be a flop. because then the whole universe would be changed. The whole Joker Batman universe would be changed, and I changed, and I don't like the idea that would bring them as competitors in a different way, you know, because in Joker stories, they created each other in a way, but not in the same way that if Joker, besides everything that he goes through and what turns him into what he is and shown in the movie, this kind of new plot, new subplot, would for me ruin the story. You know, so there are these simplistic solutions to over-explain points that should be left open to interpretation. Even though it was clear their relationship with the girl, Sophie, was a figment of his imagination, as I told you before. Now, we're going to the second song, and it's called Send in the Clowns. This version sung by Frank Sinatra, and Sinatra recorded Send in the Clowns in 1973 for his album All Blue Eyes Is Back, which attained gold status. Subsequently, Sarah Vaughan, Judi Dench, Grace Jones, Barbara Streisand, Ray Conniff, Glenn Close, Cher, Placido Domingo, and Madonna, and many other artists recorded the song, and it has become since a jazz standard. I have another curiosity about the song, and I am really fan of this version I'm going to talk about, that Renato Russo, the Brazilian singer, recorded the song for his album, The Stonewall Celebration Concert, in 1994. So we're going to listen now to Send in the Clowns with Frank Sinatra.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, you in midair. Send in the clowns. Isn't it bliss? Don't you approve? One who keeps tearing around, one who can't move. Where are the clowns? Send in the clowns. Just when I'd stopped opening doors, finally knowing the one that I wanted was yours, making my entrance again with my usual flair. Sure of my lines, no one is there. Don't you love the farce? My fault, I fear. I thought that you'd want what I want. Sorry, my dear. But where are the clowns? Send in the clowns. Don't bother, they're here. Isn't it rich? Isn't it queer? Losing my timing this late in my career. Where are the clowns? There ought to be clowns. Well, maybe next year.
And that was Sending the Clowns with Frank Sinatra. And there's another thing very curious about a song. Have you ever heard about Simpsons, right? Oh, who haven't? But you know Krusty the Clown from The Simpsons? He sings his own version of the song Sending the Clowns with new lyrics to make it more clown-focused in the episode Krusty Gets Cancelled from The Simpsons' fourth season. I've watched it, and it's great. Go watch it, too. Now we're going back to talking about a little bit of about the film, and I've read some critics before recording this show, coming to the show, and I might say that I do not agree with all of them. And one of the points that really bothered me is that some critics, a lot of them, actually, they are picking that the movie is not a Martin Scorsese movie, and that the director, Todd Phillips, is trying to be Martin Scorsese. And there are some critics that go through all in all, the whole entire critic, saying how it should be a Martin Scorsese movie. And that's, I think it's a wrong way to see the movie, because if you're trying to compare Todd Phillips with Scorsese and trying to see expecting that the Joker is supposed to be something like a Martin Scorsese movie or aesthetic, which it has. The aesthetic is there, but we'll be frustrated. But you're just analyzing it wrong, because Martin Scorsese may have influenced Joker, but writer and director Todd Phillips reveals that it was a specific era of the cinema that inspired his and Joaquin Phoenix's take on the classic villain. So let's now listen to a critic from The Verge, because it's always good to have different points of view, and you can find this critic on TheVerge.com, and I quote, "Todd Phillips' Joker has been one of the most discussed films of the year in past because it was controversial, before it was even made. When the film was first announced, not long after the disastrous DC movie Suicide Squad revealed its own cinematic take on the Joker character, a vocal subsegment of the film would rebelled at the idea of rebooting the villain yet again and protested DC's interest in focus on him at the expense of so many other characters. But once Phillips' film started screening for the critics, new conversation topics emerged. Whether Joker, as Phillips and co-writer Scott Silver considered it, is dangerous, whether it's a call to violent action or a celebration of anarchy, whether it has a coherent message or just a mashup of films like Fight Club and The King of Comedy, whether it's actually a comic book film, which Phillips denies, or more of a melodrama, and so forth. Any movie, then, incorporates Joker, the best-known comic book villain, arguably the most popular villain, period, is going to be talked about. We should absolutely talk about the movie, and we should absolutely never stop talking about the real-world subject matter that people may see mirrored in the film. What it shouldn't do is conflate the idea that one can't exist without the other. Joker is a mostly entertaining movie, one of the features a superb performance from a master actor. It isn't anything more than that, and shouldn't be treated as such," and I end quotes. Now, about the third song, it's widely recognizable because it's Smile, that is a song based on an instrumental theme used in the soundtrack for Charlie Chaplin's 1936 movie, Modern Times. And pay attention to this. Chaplin composed the music inspired by Puccini's Tosca. John Thurden and Geoffrey Parsons added lyrics and title in 1954, and in lyrics based on lines and themes from a film, the singer is telling the listener to cheer up and that there is always a bright moral, just as long as they smile. Smile has become a popular standard since its original use in Chaplin's film. Now you stay with me and listen to the delightful Smile with Jimmy Durante.
Smile, though your heart is aching. Smile, even though it's breaking. When there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by if you smile. Through your fear and sorrow, smile, and maybe tomorrow you'll see the sun come shining through for you. Light up your face with gladness, hide every trace of sadness, although a tear may be ever so near. That's the time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use of crying? You find that life is still worthwhile if you just smile.
Smile, though your heart is aching. Smile, even though it's breaking. When there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by.
If you smile through your fear and sorrow, smile, and maybe tomorrow you'll see the sun come shining through for you. Light up your face with gladness.
Smile.
Hide every trace of sadness, although a tear may be ever so near. That's the time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use of crying? You find that life is still worthwhile if you just smile.
You'll find that life's worthwhile
if you just smile.
I am Batman. Everybody here in Gotham City listens to Soundtrack.
Okay, and now we are back with some BuzzFeed quick facts. They're fun and they are really quick. So, for Joker, Joaquin Phoenix went on an extreme diet and lost 52 pounds, what is 23 kilos, when preparing for the role. Phoenix studied the movements of iconic silent film stars like Buster Keaton. And the film's storyline, following a failed stand-up comedian, came from the famous Batman, The Killing Joke graphic novel. The silent film The Man Who Laughs from 1928 was also another major influence on the movie. The script often changed on the day before shooting, and the actors would have to adapt, which they did really well, and even improvise the characters. What brings us to the last song. But before going to the last song, I want to invite you to join us in our social network on Facebook. It's just look for facebook.com/radiouninter. You will find us. You can send us messages, send us opinions and comments and whatever you want. If you want to suggest a movie or a TV series or a Netflix series for that matter, you can send via Facebook. And you can always listen to us at uninter.com/radioweb. The movie ends with That's Life, a popular song first recorded by Marion Montgomery. The most famous version is by, again, Frank Sinatra, released on his 1966 album of the same name. Sinatra recorded the song after hearing an earlier cover by O.C. Smith. The song proved successful and reached the fourth spot on Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart. Before going, I wanted to take the opportunity to thank my crew and everybody who's involved with the production of this show, including Mauri Koenig, Manuel Aurio Germano, Alexandre Correia, Guilherme Carvalho, Bárbara Carvalho, Evandro Tozin, Jaqueline Dana, e Valéria and Valéria Alves. Now we're gonna listen to the fourth and ultimate song, that's called That's Life, with Frank Sinatra. So long, farewell, auf Wiedersehen, and goodbye.
Slap that bass, slap it till it's busy, slap that bass, keep the rhythm busy, zoom, 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 misery, you got to go. Slap that bass, use it like a tonic, slap that bass, keep your philharmonic, zoom, 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 and the milk and honey will flow. Dictators would be better off if they zoom, zoom now and then. Today you can see that the happiest men all got rhythm, in which case, if you want a bubble, slap that bass, slap away your trouble, learn to zoom, 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 slap that bass. Axes, there's no happiness. Zoom, 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 rhythm leads your ace. The future doesn't threaten me if I can only get me someone to slap that bass. Happiness is not a riddle when I'm listening to that big bass fiddle. Slap that bass. I said slap that bass.
We said slap those beats.
All right, slap that bass and I'll slap these beats. Well, slap my face. Can he slap that bass?
Beat.
Bass.
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 Beat.